שלום, נושא השיעור שלנו היום הוא הכנה לפסח. אתם מוזמנים להיכנס לאתר שלנו.
Hello. Today we're going to have a lesson about the preparation for Pesach. You can ask questions at Kabda TV. Selected questions will be aired here during the lesson here.
Pesach זה לידת העם שלא היה קודם.
Passover is the birth of a nation that didn't exist before. There is no such thing in history with any nation on earth that it has this birthday. Birth date. But the people of Israel does. There's an actual moment from which on you can say that it was born. Because the birth of the nation is connection among people who attain it, and then in the connection between them, there's this special essence where the Creator, the upper force, appears. And he is together with them. And then they are called the people of the Lord, of the Creator. And this is called their birth. Before this, you have to qualify the kelim, the vessels, to prepare them. Because it's a nation that came out of Egypt. Before that, all of the evil appeared, the initial nature of humanity, and especially within this group, which in the future should achieve the level of the people of Israel. And here we have to understand what are these special kelim that we need to prepare, the desires. They belong to every person on earth. If that person wants to be connected above his ego with other people, as one man with one heart, in brotherly love, and love your neighbor as yourself is the goal, then we take those corrupt desires, spoiled desires that we have initially, rise above them, correct them, and in the corrected kelim, we are born at a new spiritual level in the spiritual world. Let's see how this happens and hope, make every effort for it to happen, because it's all attained only in the connection among people. Let's go.
We're learning from Rabash, writings of Rabash, Volume 2, page 483. What is the need to borrow the kelim from the Egyptians? It is written, "Speak now in the ears of the people, that each man will borrow from his neighbor, and each woman from her neighbor, vessels of silver and vessels of gold. And the Lord gave the people's favor in the eyes of the Egyptians." Our sages said, the disciples of Rabbi Yanai said, "Do means please." The Creator said to Moses, "Please, go and tell them, Israel, to please borrow vessels of silver and vessels of gold from the Egyptians, so that that righteous will not say, 'He kept, and they enslaved them and afflicted them, and then he did not keep, and they will come out with many possessions.'" This is perplexing. If the Creator wanted to keep His promise to Abraham, as it is written, "And afterwards they will come out with many possessions," could He not make the people of Israel wealthy without borrowing vessels from the Egyptians? It seems like fraud, for it seems that they initially borrowed by deceit, meaning without intending to return. We should also understand why the Creator said to Moses to implore Israel to borrow vessels from the Egyptians as it is said above, that do means please, request. Also, what is this imploring? It seems to mean that the Creator knew that they would object to it. So he asked Moses to speak to Israel. Thus, we should understand the reason for Israel's objection to this. We should also understand the words, "And the Lord gave the people's favor in the eyes of the Egyptians." How can we understand such a thing, which is completely contradictory? Although anything is possible from the perspective of the Creator, but from the literal perspective, this is difficult to grasp. As it is written, "And the more they afflicted them, the more they multiplied, and the more they spread out. And they detested the sons of Israel." Our sages said, it shows that they were as thorns in their eyes. It follows that from thorns, meaning being unable to stand the people of Israel and seeing them as thorns, they now turned completely around, and the Egyptians liked the people of Israel. In the Creator's promise to Abraham, "And afterwards they will come out with many possessions," we should also understand the whole matter that is presented there. And he said to him, "I am the Lord who brought you out of Ur, of the Chaldeans, to give you this land to inherit it." And he said, "Lord God, by what will I know that I will inherit it?" And he said to Abraham, "Know for certain that your descendants will be strangers in a land that is not theirs, and they will be enslaved and oppressed for 400 years. And afterwards, they will come out with many possessions." Here too, we should understand the answer to Abraham, "By what will I know that I will inherit it?" Since the Creator's answer was to this question, as it is written, "And he said to Abraham, know for certain that your descendants will be strangers in a land that is not theirs, where they will be enslaved and oppressed 400 years, and afterwards they will come out with many possessions." Thus, the question was about guarantees on the inheritance, and the answer to the guarantee was that the people of Israel will be in exile. But is exile a guarantee for inheriting the land? Baal HaSulam explained the meaning of this question. It is known that there is no light without a kli, a vessel. That is, it is impossible to receive filling if there is no lack. A lack is called a kli. And when Abraham saw what the Creator wanted to give his sons, he said, "I do not see that my sons will have a need for that spiritual inheritance of the land." He said, "If they receive a small illumination, they will be content, because the smallest degree in spirituality brings more pleasure than all the corporeal pleasures in the world." Accordingly, when they receive some small illumination, they might think that there are no greater degrees than what they have attained, and will therefore have no need to ask for anything more. And because of this, Abraham's question to the Creator was, "By what will I know that they will have the need to inherit the spiritual land?" Thus, he was asking the Creator to tell him how it might happen that they will have a light without a kli. Abraham understood that the Creator gives the light, but the kelim, meaning a desire for greater lights than they already received, would make them see that they need to achieve greater ascension than they feel now. There's a rule in spirituality that anything spiritual that comes to a person makes him feel unsurpassable wholeness, since anything spiritual is a complete feeling without any deficiency. Otherwise, it is not regarded as spiritual. For only in a corporeal manner can there be pleasure. And still we feel that there is a greater pleasure. This is not so in spirituality.
So the question is, how can we come out of Egypt and take from Egypt all the kelim that will suffice for us until the end of correction? How is this possible? Do we feel it? Do we understand it? Do we really take? How do we take them and run away from Egypt? How can we picture this thing, please, quickly? How can we, after we say, discover something in Egypt, take from there all the kelim until the end of correction? These are huge kelim that have to appear a long time afterwards on the degrees, and we are only at the beginning of the way. How is this possible? Is the question clear? So, what's the answer?
It may be that the whole process of Egypt is based on integration, by them integrating with each other and coercing them to serve the desire. By that, they acquire vessels with which they can come out.
Yeah, basically the clay is one clay. It's connected. Every part exists in every other part. And through this itkalelut, mingling, you basically have the whole of creation.
How can we take all the vessels from Egypt so that it will be enough for us until the final correction? I don't know. In general, any Egyptian or anything, any Egypt that is revealed is a resistance for connection upon which you can make an effort towards connection. I don't know.
Maybe they didn't take all the kelim, but the approach is, as we said yesterday, that when he killed the first Egyptian, he was going against Pharaoh. So it's possible to use the form of the Egyptians in order to bestow.
That every Egyptian that you come to be in contact with and you overcoming and you take that vessel, this vessel can be enough for you until the final correction. The question is how much resistance you reveal in you.
Meaning, we shouldn't fight with our desires or evil inclination, but agree to leave all the desires inside and rise above it, but know that they have remained in you and the evil inclination stays.
This is why we have a 10. You enlarge a friend, immediately his vessels become yours, and every friend has enough vessels for 20 corrections in the 10.
Yeah, that's the mingling, the itkalelut of the kelim. With our itkalelut, we create one big kli and bring it to the Creator, and this is what happens in Egypt.
We'll continue with the article, page 485 in the bottom. Thus, Abraham wondered how and through what they would have a need to ask the Creator to give them greater degrees, called inheritance of the land. He said that the Creator's reply to him, "Know for certain that your descendants will be strangers in a land that is not theirs," means that from here, meaning from the exile in Egypt, they will have a need to ask the Creator to give them greater strength each time. The reason is that when a person begins to advance in the work of the Creator and wants all his actions to be in order to bestow, he sees that he cannot prevail. At that time, one asks the Creator to help him. As our sages said, he who comes to purify is aided. The Holy Zohar asks, How is he aided? With the holy soul. Indeed, everything that they overcame in the work sank in the earth, as he says about their building of Pitom and Ramses. That is, each day they had to start their work anew, because everything they built went into the abyss, and they always saw themselves as though they had never begun to work, because they did not remember any word of Torah that concerns work, and always reflect on themselves. Where is our work? The efforts we put into the work, where did they go? It is even more difficult to understand how the klipa, the shell of Pharaoh, could swallow all their work to the point that they did not feel that they ever engaged in serving the Creator, that their goal was to achieve wholeness, and they knew what they wanted. Suddenly, they have come to a state where they forgot everything, and no reshimot, recollections, of remained in them from their work. All this was deliberate. The Creator has prepared a klipa for this purpose, so as to constantly keep them in a state of beginning. It is known that all beginnings are tough, so they will be forced to ask the Creator to help them. As said above, that he who comes to purify is aided. And as the Holy Zohar says, that each time they receive a holy soul, which is a force from above, meaning that each time they receive additions to the soul. This accumulates into a great amount, as it is known that what is given from heaven is not taken back. However, although each illumination received from above departs for the time being, in the end, when he completes the amount of labor that one must do, as in everything that is in the might of your hand to do, that too, he receives at once everything he had received one at a time. He thought that it all went to the klipot, but then he receives everything back. According to the above, it follows that the whole matter of the exile in Egypt was in order to receive kelim, vessels, and the need for the great lights, called inheritance of the land. This is what Abraham was perplexed about, and said that he did not see that his sons would have a need for these great lights. And since there is no light without a kli, it turns out that even if there is a desire to give them, they have no kelim in which to receive. For this reason, they were given the exile in Egypt, where through the questions and arguments of the Egyptians, they will be continuously emptied from what little kedusha, holiness, they had acquired, for they suckled from them. For this reason, they will always have a need to ask the Creator to illuminate their way for them, so they can go forward. But they say that they kept going backwards, which is why the Ari wrote that at the time of the Exodus from Egypt, the people of Israel were in 49 gates of impurity until the King of Kings appeared to them and redeemed them. This seems to contradict reason, since it is known that Moses and Aaron came to Egypt and spoke to the sons of Israel about the Creator wanting to bring them out of Egypt. They performed all the tokens in Egypt, and they saw the 10 plagues that the Egyptians suffered. And this must have brought the Israel closer to Kedusha, and not the opposite, that they kept failing to a deeper gate of Tum'ah, impurity to the point that when it was time to come out of Egypt, meaning when they had to have the best preparation for reception of the light of redemption, we see that when they received the light of redemption, they were in the 49 gates of Tum'ah, impurity. Is this possible? As Bala Sulam explained, the exile in Egypt was in order to obtain the kelim of the Egyptians. But it was only to borrow, and later to return to them. He interpreted that this matter of the Creator saying to Abraham, "Your descendants will be strangers in a land that is not theirs," was a guarantee of the inheritance. This meant that they would have a need to receive the abundance from the Creator, since wanting to come out of the enslavement of the Egyptians can be only through the help of a holy soul. Then they will need the Creator's help each time. And from this, they will have a need to draw higher degrees. Now we will explain the meaning of the exile in Egypt and the lending of the kelim from the Egyptians. We see that when Moses and Aaron came to the sons of Israel, as it is written, "And Moses and Aaron went and gathered all the elders of the sons of Israel. And Aaron said all the words that the Creator had said to Moses, and performed the tokens before the eyes of the people. And the people believed and heard." We see from this that as soon as Moses and Aaron came to the sons of Israel, they accepted all the words that the Creator had said to Moses with faith above reason. And everything that the Egyptians made them understand with all the questions and doubts about the faith of Israel did not count at all, because they went above reason. For this reason, the fact that the whole time they were in exile could not impact them at all now. That is, once Moses and Aaron came to the sons of Israel with the Creator's desire to take them out of exile, they promptly took it upon themselves not to listen henceforth to the arguments of the Egyptians, who came in the name of Pharaoh, king of Egypt, that it is better for them to remain under their governance, and who tried to make them see that the way of the Egyptians was true, and they should not listen to what Moses and Aaron were telling them. We see that you are yelling, "Let us go and sacrifice to our God." This made you think that you should leave Egypt and follow them. And we understand that you want to listen to all that they are telling you with eyes shut. Can this be? While we are making perfect sense, you have nothing to reply to us. Yet you insist that you are willing to go all the way according to the words of Moses and Aaron. From this we see that after Moses and Aaron came with the message of redemption, that now they are coming out of enslavement, for they were unable to do the holy work. They were happy with this message and did not need any exaggerations of flavors of Torah and mitzvot. Rather, they were happy precisely with this, meaning with being able to simply observe in practice. This gave them complete satisfaction, and they were delighted in doing their master's will. As it is written, "Therefore they cry out, let us go and sacrifice to our God." It follows that now that they are coming out from the exile in Egypt with kelim that do not need anything, but as it is written, and the people believed and heard, and they have no need to inherit the land, that the Creator had promised to Abraham, as it is written, know for certain. And afterwards, they will come out with many possessions, meaning that the exile was a guarantee that they would have the need to receive the delight and pleasure, which is an inheritance of the land, that the Creator sought to give to His descendants, but they still did not have the kelim for this, and were content with little. This is why, and the Lord said to Moses, speak now in the ears of the people, that each man will borrow from his neighbor, and each woman from her neighbor, vessels of silver and vessels of gold. According to what Baal HaSulam interpreted, we should say that it means that they will take the vessels of silver and the vessels of gold that the Egyptians have, meaning tear their desires and longings, namely all the doubts that they had about the way of the people of Israel. The Egyptians were always demanding that everything you do must be with reason and understanding, and your engagement in overcoming in order to exit self-love and to do everything in order to bestow is the wrong way, because the Creator is good and does good. When He created the world, He certainly did it to benefit His creations, meaning that we, creatures, will enjoy the delight and pleasure. But you are leaving the right path and taking on a path that is completely against the purpose of creation. You are telling us that this is the true way, that you do not need anything for self-love, but to do everything in order to bestow contentment upon the Maker. But whenever the people of Israel heard the Egyptians' slander about the path of bestowal, they would run from them, meaning they ran from these thoughts when they came to confuse the thoughts of the sons of Israel and instill their views in the hearts of the sons of Israel. For this reason, the Creator knew that they would not want to hear Egypt's questions and doubts of who and what, but they did not have the kelim in which to place the many possessions, since there is no light without a kli. That is, a person cannot be given anything for which he has no desire. Therefore, if he were to ask the sons of Israel, what do you want me to give you? They would say, we do not want anything from you. On the contrary, our only aspiration is to give to you, and not that you will give to us.
Thus,
how can they receive that delight and pleasure called many possessions, which is considered that He wants to give them nefesh, ruach, neshama, chaya, yechida? They have no need for this. This is why the Creator wanted them to take the Egyptians' kelim, meaning their questions and doubts, and all their desires, which are the kelim of the Egyptians. But they were not to really take those kelim, only borrow them. That is, they would take the Egyptians' kelim only to have a need to satisfy those deficiencies, but not to really keep those kelim, because the kelim, meaning these thoughts and desires, do not belong to the people of Israel. It is only a temporary borrowing, so as to later return to them. That is, afterwards, meaning once they receive the filling that belongs to these questions, precisely through them it will be possible to bestow upon them the filling. This is similar to receiving the lights that belong to their kelim, which are called vessels of reception in order to receive. However, they promptly threw away their kelim and used the lights that belong to their kelim, but received everything in order to bestow contentment upon the Maker. This is similar to what Baal HaSulam interpreted regarding Haman and Mordechai. He said that we see that when Ahasuerus wanted to glorify Mordechai, as it is written, and the king said, "What honor or dignity has been bestowed on Mordechai for this?" And the king said to him, "What is to be done for the man whom the king desires to honor?" Haman said to the king, "Let them bring royal apparel." Accordingly, he asked, "How can such a thing be? If the king wants to honor Mordechai, he asks Haman, what is to be done for the man whom the king desires to honor?" He answers that this implies to the order of the imparting abundance upon the lower ones. The Creator certainly wants to give honor and greatness to the righteous, which is Mordechai, the righteous. But should he ask the righteous, "What do you want me to give you?" the righteous will say that he does not want to receive anything. On the contrary, all he wants is to bestow upon the king. This is why he had to ask Haman, the Haman in him, who understands that it is good to receive. And then he said, "And do so to Mordechai the Jew," meaning that he will receive the honor and greatness not in the kelim of Haman, which are called receiving in order to receive, but in receiving in order to bestow. Similarly, we should explain concerning the borrowing of the kelim from the Egyptians. When the Creator asked Moses to ask Israel to borrow kelim from the Egyptians, we asked, why did the Creator have to ask Israel for such a thing? Why would the people of Israel not want to borrow these kelim? The answer is that when Moses and Aaron came to the Creator's emissaries to bring the people of Israel out of the exile, it is written, and the people heard and believed, meaning with faith above reason. They did not need anything or had any desire for high degrees. They were content with being able to engage in Torah and mitzvot without any disturbances from the Egyptians. This is similar to what we said above, that he said that if the king were to ask Mordechai the righteous, "What honor and greatness do you want me to give you?" he would reply that he does not want to receive anything from the king, but on the contrary, he wants to give to the king. This is why the king asked Haman what to do with the man whom the king desires to honor. Haman knew what to ask. He said, "Let them bring royal apparel, which the king has worn, and a horse on which the king has ridden, and on whose head a royal crown has been placed." This is why the king needed Haman's kelim, meaning what Haman understood that one should receive from the king. For this reason, he had to ask Moses to ask Israel for a favor, that they will borrow the kelim of the Egyptians, meaning temporarily, so that they will have a desire and craving to satisfy all the lacks that the Egyptians demand to satisfy. He had to ask, because the people of Israel would settle for what they had and would always run from their thoughts and desires. But now they hear the questions and doubts of the Egyptians. And since he promised Abraham that afterwards they will come out with many possessions, he needed them to take the Egyptians' kelim only as landing and then give them back. That is, they have nothing to do with their wishes, and what they took was only temporary, to be able to receive the lights called inheritance of the land, which the Creator had promised to Abraham. Now we can understand what we asked about how the matter was turned from one end to the other, since the writing says, "And they detested the sons of Israel," meaning that they were as thorns, and afterwards, and the Lord gave the people's favor in the eyes of the Egyptians. Wanting to hear their questions gave favor, because they thought they were going their way, and the Lord gave the people's favor by telling them to borrow the kelim from them, since this was what the Egyptians wanted.
Clear, unclear, what do you think? This essay is very, very deep. Let's hope we'll dig into it. Yes, Oren?
So what should be our regard to the Egyptians' questions?
Not to slight anything, because with them we have to go forward. The only question is how to use them. The questions of the Egyptians are real questions, and on top of them, we just have to bring correction. The question is, how do we use them, how do we process them, so that they become the kelim with which we achieve dvikut? What?
Dennis from Moscow is asking, what does it mean, he who comes to purify is aided?
That if you come to purify, then you are aided. Meaning that the upper light works according to the equivalence of form. To the extent that a person has a tendency to sympathize with the light, he receives from it immediately an illumination that corrects him. Ascension, awakening, all kinds of phenomena in the will to receive, phenomena in the tzimtzum, the restriction, and the masach, the screen, the revelation of the reshimot, the abilities to understand, feel, and process the material. It all comes according to the extent that a person has the right tendency. It's expressed in us in connection before the entrance into Egypt and after the entrance into Egypt. The difference is that in Egypt we discover how much separation, how bad it is. That's it. And then we're willing to escape that state at any cost. The Red Sea, whatever. Just run away from it. I prefer to die than to live in this way. And afterwards, there's the matter of correction. We're the same kelim that we don't want to use, we have to build above them the masach and the ochozer, so we use them by rejection. The kelim of the Egyptians remain. Using them is forbidden. What is permitted is to build above them spiritual degrees. there will never be a reception of light in the will to receive. It'll be only if you build above it the power of rejection, power of refusal, and then by ascending above it, you will discover the inclination to bestow, the tendency to it. And in it, you'll begin to find sympathy with the spiritual world, with the Creator. It's a perception that for now we can't quite imagine, but we have to try to be, what does it mean to be in giving? It is outside of a person, and to be specifically in this. Okay. Yes. You started answering it, but Sergei from Nuremberg and Scott from England are asking about bringing the kelim back to the Egyptians. So what does it mean to borrow kelim and then give them back? We don't use the kelim themselves, but our impression of them. In the will to receive, we don't use the will to receive. We build above it a desire to bestow. Therefore, all of our filling is not in the desire, but above it. Well, these are discernments, spiritual discernments. You don't have the words for them. Koka what? Are the Egyptians kelim? Yes. And Israel are not kelim? Desires. Yeah, the Egyptians are the desire to receive as it is, in order to receive, to enjoy, to feel in it, the feeling, to live in it. Yes?
And Israel?
Israel is the inclination to be in giving. Now, how can giving be expressed in us, manifest in us? By our beginning to feel outside of the will to receive existence above it, before it, so to speak. How is this expressed? By wanting to be, to mingle in the group, to mingle in others, the upper light works on me according to this inclination, because that's its nature, to be in this inclination, in this action. And then I get a new feeling, a new ability. I begin to feel the ability to exist outside of myself. That's it? Yes?
So Egypt,
it's called faith above reason. Bestowal above reception. How can this be? We measure these things in the kelim of the Egyptians, in the will to receive. Because this existence in order to bestow is built on the will to receive. Otherwise, you don't have any measurements, no, how can I put it? No perception. Yes?
So the entire Egypt is a struggle between the Egyptians and Israel on the way you use the keli?
Yes. It's exactly the same as between Haman and Mordechai. But you see, why did the king ask him, what should I do? What should the king do with a man whom the king wants to glorify. What do you ask? Haman. Because only according to these kelim, with the intentions to receive, because the intention to receive increases the kli, magnifies it. Because what is a klipa? It's naranchai, but in the opposite way. It feels pleasure in receiving in this way for itself and from everyone. It's not just a person who receives. Like an animal. It sees something like fish or meat, grabs it. It doesn't want to harm. It doesn't feel that by eating you, it's harming you. And it doesn't feel that it has special pleasure because it ate you. There's no relation to another. A man is someone who has a relation to another person. I enjoy being greater than others. And I enjoy their feeling inferior to me. This is already the intention to receive. This is called Haman. This is why him you ask what to do with a man whom the king wants to glorify. Because the kelim are big. Yes?
So, it's not clear for what reason Israel going to Egypt.
To acquire these kelim. Egypt means in order to receive. Before Egypt, there was no in order to receive. They didn't feel any need to connect as well in order to bestow the children of Jacob. They didn't understand Joseph.
So they go in order to connect, in order to receive. That's why they go in. What motivates them to go into Egypt?
The need to have a need to eventually connect in order to bestow. But you can't do this without the revelation of the aim to receive. On top of what do you build your bestowal? We're not the creators who is just a force of bestowal. We are desires to receive that can work as desires to bestow. So he creates this inversion in his work by restricting himself. He builds of himself an image of bestowal. But he's not bestowing. He's using the love of the Creator for him in order to build within him a special attitude toward the Creator. Yes?
So what's the right way to use the Egyptians' questions?
We'll learn this. It's not immediate. But the principle is that we need all the questions with all of their discernments, except the intention should be in order to bestow. It's like dressing Mordechai with the coat, the jacket that Haman wanted. The cover of the king. Because Haman wanted to receive everything that the king has. And what happened was, is that everything that the king has, Mordechai receives in order to bestow. There are no words. No words. Yes.
We see here in the article that we have two versions, we can call it, of getting the vessels from the Egyptians and turning from Achashverosh's address to Aman. And I heard the third degree here that Rav talked about the connection that we have.
Wait a minute. Why with us, in us? It's in Egypt. What did the children of Israel do? They went in, the children of Jacob. They were quarreling with one another. They had no need to connect. And afterwards they started building Python and Ramses, which is a connection between them, to become Jewish. They discovered that they couldn't. They wanted to, but they couldn't. Why? Because their aim to receive was between them. It's called being in the exile in Egypt. The Egyptians are filling up the space between those who wanted to connect. We have to see it. Let's say I'm in a tent. I want to connect with them, and I see that I can't. I keep forgetting about it. These Egyptians between us are constantly stealing our good thoughts. We try to do the right things. We make efforts for it. But after every action, we see it all disappears. Like water in the sand. They just disappear in the sand. And until when? And the children of Israel aside from the work. So we discover that we want to connect, but we can't. We have to locate the interrupter. You could say it's Pharaoh, you can say it's our nature or the Creator. It's all the same. It's all the same. Interrupting. What are we doing with this interference? We're talking about it already, but it's still not suffocating us. Let's say we come to a state that we prefer to die than to live if we don't connect. If I don't connect, I don't have the spiritual world, and I don't want the corporeal world to take it away from me. If I know that I'm not progressing toward the purpose, I'm willing to just fall asleep right now and never wake up. What's the point? So here we have to insist so that we discover the interrupter. To the extent that we discover the interrupter, we have such hatred from him that we eventually run away from him. We discover how much he's interrupting. It's called the 10 plagues. We have yet to learn it. Who feels it? Pharaoh? To the extent that we sympathize with him, we feel these plagues. Meaning to the extent that I'm still an Egyptian, that I'm still Pharaoh, in order to receive, to that extent I feel these plagues. And these plagues push me out. To bestowal, to connection. But it's all toward connection. What do you mean? What are we saying? Before that, they didn't want to connect. In Egypt, they wanted to and discovered what was stopping them. They fled from the obstructions. They rose above them. It's the exodus from Egypt. Through the big light, it's God the Chokhmah, the light of Egypt. And then what? Then you have the covenant. Avut, reception of the Torah against the hatred when you are at the foot of Mount Sinai, the general hatred. Opposite that, you receive the strength from above and the method to connect until the end of correction, where you're basically reconstructing the broken clay of Adam HaRishon. That's it. Of course it's all toward connection. Can Can't you see that this is how they work in Jerusalem?
No.
Would you like some inside information about it?
No. I have no desire. Thank God I'm receiving my information from here.
So we see that in the story of Purim, there was also the connection that the people were parted, and we also engage in connection. That goes throughout the whole path.
Yes.
My question is, why wasn't it enough what they did in Egypt? Since the promise to Abraham that you should know that your offsprings will be in Egypt, in the land of theirs.
It was enough for what they did in Egypt. That's why all the mitzvot are to remember what happened in Egypt. All the corrections and all the corrections bring them to the temple, to the first temple. That's it. Everything that happens afterwards is in order to integrate with the nations of the world and correct the whole of reality. Not Israel. Israel are the head. We only correct tiny fraction of reality. You are the least of all the nations. Why the rest of the corrections? This comes afterwards. It's what we're doing now.
So wait a minute. In Egypt, there was a full correction and we keep on correcting or not? Or it was only a partial correction in Egypt?
In Egypt, there was a preparation for the first temple. And in the ruin of the first temple and the ruin of the second temple, there was preparation for the final correction, which we have to do now.
Throughout all the corrections, you see that they're taking the vessels from the world to receive.
Yes.
Borrowing, or... Well, Rav explained this. Where today do we get these vessels and build the desire to bestow?
It's already. We just have to integrate and connect. It's already. During the exile, there was the mingling. Now, we just have to correct it.
There's a difference between Egypt and Purim. In Egypt, the people turned to the Egyptians to ask for the kelim, and the Creator asked the people to.
Now, too, we're turning to the Egyptians in order to receive the kelim.
But in Purim, it was different. In Purim, the king is turning to Haman, asking, saying,
and here, in Egypt, it's the Pharaoh, and there too. Haman.
Not directly. Over there was through the nation. It turned the people to turn to the Egyptians to get the kelim. In Purim was directly to Haman. So what happens today?
It doesn't matter. It's the same thing. The same thing. You have to...
It's like Egypt or like Purim, or is it something new?
There's nothing new. There's a method that works all along the process of correction. It's to be included in the will to receive in order to receive, saying how hateful it is, how obstructive it is to you in order to cling to the Creator, and you want to turn it into a lever that gives you the final dvikut, adhesion.
Thank you.
Haifa, please.
Shela mikutzat Haifa.
A question from the Haifa group. Is it right to say that the vessels of Israel are Galgal Ta'anayim and the Egyptian vessels are Rachab D'Aliyah?
No. The kelim of the Egyptians are not Rachab D'Aliyah, they raised Rachab. The kelim of the Egyptians are kelim you still have to process and correct and sort out before we say about them that they are raised achab. But it's true that these desires to receive that we are included in during the descent, during the exile, during the corruption, these desires to receive, on top of them we build the intention to bestow. Our kelim are not the will to receive. They're the intention to bestow built on the desires to receive. That's why in those kelim we never receive. More Haifa?
Yes,
one more question. This article is very profound and complicated.
Right.
What is Rabash trying to pass on to students in our height? What can we find for the work between us in this article?
Right now, we're reading these articles for the first time. Thank God we've come to a state where we can relate to them more seriously and more to the point. We'll understand how Rabash did something that no other Kabbalist did before him. He opened up for us the entirety of the spiritual work in a way that's suitable for our souls, and explained there all the details of the whole process that a person has to undergo. And we have yet to discover what happens in all of his articles. No Kabbalist did this before him. His greatness is in writing it as close as possible to us, as close as possible. Let's hope that we will open up these, unravel these articles. I remember that I read this next to him, and I couldn't even express my question. Now you understand this too. I didn't know what to ask, how to ask. I saw that it wasn't clear, and that I'm not in this essay, and it passes by me, but I couldn't ask. It's a sign that the kelim were still not revealed yet sufficiently. So we need to try. But this effort is in connection to the extent that we connect. To that extent, we'll feel what we are missing, and we'll be able to benefit from his articles. They're all like that. There are essays that are like, you know, they help the every man his friend, all these shorter articles that he wrote on a piece of paper for me in the park. But no, they are profound. Very profound. I remember how he wrote them. It was like he was just kind of offhand. It was alive in him. But verbally, he didn't really know how to express himself eloquently. Once he wrote, when he would go over it again, it was clearer, more kind of flowing. But the essays are very special. Only afterwards we'll appreciate them. It's not time yet. I wish we will reveal to the world Baal HaSulam. And Rabash is still ahead of us. Okay, yes?
The questions of the Egyptians are, who is the Lord that I should hear his voice, and what is this work? Why are you doing this work? So how can we work with that?
Who is the Lord that I should obey his voice is about the will to bestow. That controls the world. Am I willing to be in a reality where the will to bestow governs? Am I willing to exit this bubble I am in, where I don't even see that I'm in a bubble, but I am in it, and it's totally in order to receive, working on me, in my mind and heart, and I don't see anything outside of in order to receive?
ולכן
And therefore, who is the Lord that I should obey His voice? Means, who is this upper force that outside of my feeling and understanding and attainment? It's the complete opposite of me, and that's why I can't detect Him. And what is this work for you? Meaning, how can you go for something that is against nature? It's unnatural, impossible, it can't be. You can't actualize it. What does it mean to go against nature? How can a piece of metal turn itself into a piece of wood or an animal to itself want and itself do? It's impossible. So what is this work for you? What can be done, and why, and what for, and how? The questions are very poignant. Yes.
And how to work with them?
As much as we can. However we can. We're given the group, the study, to invoke the reforming light and thereby advance. Only this way. How to work with them? You're talking about after the exodus from Egypt. In Egypt, you only test. You try to somehow get organized in order to run away, to transcend. But the correction is on the future work, not in Egypt, but outside of it. In Egypt itself, we are controlled by the intention to receive. And all of our work is to formulate the powers of the outcry and the children of Israel side. And then we are rewarded with the power to exit. But the work is afterwards. While in Egypt, there is nothing you can do. You're controlled by Pharaoh. What, Dani?
There is still a difference when we're used to feel that we hate the ego. As you say, we'd rather die if we can't come out of it. Here in the article, there's a feeling that he's aiming us to have a different kind of relation to the ego, to use it, to befriend it. It's something unclear here.
He's explaining several states here. Of course, everything is built on top of our will to receive. Compared to the light that we check, then we see all kinds of states that the will to receive undergoes. We have to constantly take it into consideration. I can't just ascend and detach from it. Even the will to bestow is built upon the will to receive. So, although it seems to us that this work is detached from the will to receive, it isn't. We're constantly with it. We acquire kelim. What does it mean to acquire kelim from the Egyptians? Except for the idea, which is in order to receive. That's the work in Egypt, to think about the dead body. This was their ideology. Here it's the opposite. The opposite. And you see, according to the customs toward the dead body, with Egyptians and with the Jews. With the Jews is, you want to bury it as quickly as possible, and that's it. There's nothing you can do with it. Let it just disintegrate. With the Egyptians, you want to keep it as live as possible. And that's the difference between the internality, the interior approach. You saw in China, the emperor, You have the terracots, the statues. You have 10,000 soldiers or something. You see this? They have these statues. Look what they did out of this. It's a different expression of the same pyramids, the mummies. And it's a spiritual approach to the will to receive, to keep it, to use it as is. And here it's to the contrary. The will to receive is in order to, you only want to bury it. They even put lime in the pit so that the body will disintegrate as quickly as possible. There's nothing in this body.
So on the one hand, I hate the ego. On the other hand, it's as if, just like I'm happy about the evil things that are revealed, I use it.
You use it, but in the opposite way. It's called decaying from everything other than the loose bone. Well, we'll talk about it. Yeah, let's continue.
Can you explain what the integration with the vessels gives us?
He explains somewhere what it means to use the Egyptians, to use their kelim, but not their approach. There are no lights in their kelim, only a tiny illumination, so they will exist deliberately. Why was there a breaking of the vessels? So that in those vessels, in order to receive, there would be some illumination that they can receive so they can exist. Here there's also a question. If there was a tzimtzum, and it's forbidden to use the aim to receive, with the aim to receive, so how do they come to the shattering? So how does the shattering happen? That's one. And number two, after the shattering, they go into vessels in order to... Sparks go into the vessels in order to receive. What is the illumination that exists in order to receive? It's contrary to the first restriction that happened before. What is this illumination? How come? How come it penetrates into the aim to receive? That the intention to receive can draw a person to work in order to receive, to seduce him with all kinds of pleasures, as it seduces us. And in every way that is opposite from spirituality, I now get pleasure. Every way. But why does it happen? In order to draw me to all the opposite forms from pleasure. Sorry, from
bestowal.
From bestowal, right. In order to draw me to all kinds of pleasures opposite, forms opposite from bestowal, place pleasures there, so I will be able to detect this form and then come out of it. It's called they swallowed up riches and then vomited.
I'd like to ask about what we're talking all the time about, the integration in the ten. Is that also relevant, or should we take these vessels from each other? Can you explain what is this work we do in the ten?
In the ten, each one wants to erect the ten, with him being an active part of it, and he pushes everyone to connection. In what we learn, in all kinds of forms that he's included with, he's less than them, more than them, etc. Through each one's relation to the ten, we build the ten, which is basically a structure that, because each one equally relates equally to the ten, it is built as something that doesn't exist in each one, but belongs to everyone, and yet doesn't belong to anyone. It's in the air.
What is this integration? What do I take? What, with respect to the desire, the kelim, what do I take from my friends in the ten?
You're not taking anything. You're taking from them their desires for spirituality in order to sustain them and fill them. It comes out like a tower floating in the air that everyone builds.
So the integration with the vessels of the Egyptian is the work I do with myself. It's internal. And the integration with the desires of the friends is something I do. It's as if it's the intention in order to bestow. That's the difference between the integrations.
When you begin to work in order to bestow with the friends, you discover how much, to what extent you're in Egypt.
Okay, that I can't come out of my intentions to receive for myself.
Yes, yes. You want to use them.
I just want to understand what's the difference between the integration I'm supposed to do with my friends in the ten and what we just talked about in the article, that there's an integration with the vessels of the Egyptians. Who am I integrating with in Egypt?
The right integration, right hitkalelut, is when you rise up and you don't feel yourself, but only the friends. Hitkalut with Egypt is that you discover how you relate to the friends this way. That you want to feel only how you design them in order to bestow, but suddenly you discover that within it, you're still working in order to receive. That's it. But it's words, you know. When the feeling comes, it'll be different. Go on.
Where are we going to?
I don't know.
We have two options, either Zohar or Shaar HaKavanot, the Gate of Intentions.
Which essay?
A Real Prayer is Over a Real Deficiency.
Where is it?
It's not, we didn't publish it, it's on page 100 in the booklet.
Page 100, it's in our program, but we haven't read it. Or what?
We read half of it in the beginning of Pesach.
טוב, בוא נקרא.